Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 3 of the Sober Butterfly podcast. I am your host, Nidhi Molvina, and I am joined with my dear aunt, Betty, but you can call her Laura. And today we're talking all about moderate drinking, because I don't know what that means. I've never known what that means. And so I wanted to get into the brain of what we would consider a normie to understand how to build a relationship with alcohol that is healthy, or how that can exist, because for me that does not exist. Let's jump into today's episode. Hi, Betty.
Hi, darling. How are you?
I'm amazing. You look amazing. How are you?
I'm feeling good.
Okay, great. I'm so glad to have you here. So, Betty, I'm wondering, how would you define your relationship with alcohol?
Well, I think my relationship with alcohol is, as you described it, normie. Just very normal. I can occasionally drink, and then I can do without drink. It doesn't really matter to me. It's just a social thing that you can do occasionally, and there's no excesses involved. It hasn't always been like this. I know in my younger days, I was like, they call me the bumper, you know, because I was like really someone who could drink excessively, but it didn't used to affect me. I didn't feel as though I was affected by getting drunk. So I just used to drink, and you wouldn't believe this, but they used to designate me as the drunken driver. So, I don't know how that's come about, but I think my relationship with alcohol is really quite natural and healthy.
You said that your relationship with alcohol wasn't always as healthy. So I want to learn a little bit more about when you think that you were maybe at a stage in your life when your relationship with alcohol was not healthy, and then what changed for you.
I would say that they call me the bumper, first of all, because like maybe it's a Jamaican term. I don't know. But, you know, like my mom used to say, well, you're like a bumper, you know. So I used to drink, and I could drink. I could hold my liquor, and I would not get drunk. I was very focused, and I would drop people home. Until one night, I had about, I don't know, 3 or 4 people in the car at the back. And, you know, it's like a carload of people, right? And I was dropping them home one by one. And we came to this intersection where the red lights, and this car just zoomed past us and must have missed us by an inch. And I stopped the car in time. And it suddenly hit me. What are you doing? You know, are you crazy? I mean, those people all could have been killed. So I think that started to get in my mind a lot. And I think the best explanation of how I turned the corner was I went to Saudi Arabia working on a job, and you're not really supposed to drink in Saudi Arabia. It's against the law and it's against religion. But there are certain places where you can go and they make the drink. You know, you can buy kits and so on. So there were some people that were drinking to excess, and I couldn't understand it. I thought, we're in a country where you're not allowed to drink and these people are getting drunk. I don't understand it, because I was there to uphold the law as well. I didn't want to get in trouble, not in a strange country. I didn't involve myself in any of that. And by the time I finished my stint in Saudi Arabia, I went back to England, and I just couldn't drink. It's just out of me completely. I could drink maybe 1, 2 at the most, but I had no need for drink whatsoever, no need for alcohol. And I think that's really my history of how I'm at this place now.
Thank you for sharing. I feel like maybe some people need to detox in the desert of Saudi Arabia. That sounds like the thing to do. Rehab in Saudi Arabia, people. I mean, I think you sound like you're a rule follower, because, you know, at least in a foreign country, you had enough common sense to realize that you don't want to be in Saudi jail. And I understand that. But I can relate so much to the part where you mentioned that you were the designated drunk driver, because I also would be the designated drunk driver in many situations. The way that my friends and I would do it in college mainly was we would not pre-plan who was going to be the designated driver. Like, oh, okay, you should have the least amount to drink. We would sort of just take one person's car out that night, and then whoever was the most capable together exactly would just get behind that person's car. It doesn't matter if it was your car or not. So we would just sort of look at each other and be like, she's sort of like leaning in the corner. I don't think she can do it. And then it was like Russian roulette with our lives. Okay, so Betty's going to share a funny drunk story because I think it's important sometimes to share funny drunk stories. Like I have a lot of bad drunk stories, but there are funny ones. Would you like mind, Betty? I'm going to pass the mic.
Well, I wouldn't call it funny. I'd call it embarrassing for me. Okay. But I've lived with it. And so one night in my heyday, one night I was going out clubbing with a few friends and I turned up around my friend's house, Maureen, and she was in the shower. She called out to me that I could get a drink and I'd never had Southern Comfort before in my life. And I started drinking this liqueur and...
What is Southern? It's a liqueur.
It's a liqueur, okay. Yeah. And I was drinking this liqueur and I thought, this is so good. So I had another drink and another drink. And, with my ability not to get drunk, I thought, okay, this is really good. I can keep drinking and nothing happens. So I did. Anyway, by the time she came out of the shower, there was about an inch of Southern Comfort left in the bottle. And I had no shame. I said, that was good. Thank you very much, Anyway, I went in the shower. As I came out of the shower, I started feeling a little bit woozy. And I thought, fine. So then those were the days when we didn't have cell phones. So I told you how long ago it was. And she'd said to me, I got to go to the mailbox because my house phone is not working. So I said, okay, I'll come with you. And it was snowing outside. It was freezing cold. Anyway, I walked with her to the mailbox. And on the way there, I slipped on some ice and I fell down on the ground. Only to find anybody looking out the window, I didn't have any panties on. And I didn't even realize. I was so drunk. She had to help me up. And she could barely make the phone call with me dropping all over the place, slipping and sliding. So I got back to her place and I sat down. She was horrified. She just thought, oh my God, And I sat down. And as far as I was concerned, I just sat down for a minute just to get my breath. And then I'll go and get my panties, put them on and we'll leave, But oh no, I closed my eyes. When I opened them, all the girls were there. They'd been out, enjoyed themselves and had a bloody good time. So this is another thing about alcoholism. You actually miss out on a lot of stuff in life that really you could enjoy. That's what I find. Yeah, I think that's a lesson to be learned. I did learn a lesson from that. I thought, God, I was embarrassed in front of my friends as well. I think maybe a couple of them didn't even bother talking to me after that.
Thank you for sharing. I relate to that too. This idea that you pregame, that's what we would call a pregame when you drink before you go out and you go too hard at the pregame to where you can't go out. Right. So now you missed the entire sequence of the night. If you did go out, because I've been too drunk at the pregame and still forced my way out. And then you're a burden. Your friends have to watch out for you and babysit you the entire night. And that's not fun either. I'm wondering, Betty, do you know any alcoholics except for me? Do you know any alcoholics? And if so, what does that look like to you?
Alcoholics in my family.
That was my next question, actually.
Lots of people. I had an uncle or cousin, I suppose, who would get up first thing in the morning and start drinking white rum. My ex-boyfriend would drink and drink. I'd get up in the morning, drink 12-pack of beer. And by midday, he was completely paralytic. Everywhere you go, you meet people. And you don't realize until you get to know them a bit more. And there are ways of hiding it at first. But then after a while, you realize, this person drinks too much. And it's no point in telling them because that's not going to do the trick. They have to realize, they have to come to their own realization that this is something that is not good in my life, but my upbringing was Jamaican. When you were a kid, they might give you a little tiny half shot of white rum at the age of about 5. So alcohol has been around for a very long time with a lot of people, not just me, but the thing is, you have to realize when it is not doing you any good. That's it.
When you mentioned, if it's all right, I want to kind of backtrack to you. You said that you had an ex who drank too much. I'm wondering what that was like for you, because I think in relationships that I've had in the past, I've never dated anyone that could drink as much as I could. You can hide it for so long. It would just be like, oh, cute, like, oh, Like, yeah. Just, I happen to have this bottle of wine, you know, versus I always have this bottle of wine. So I'm wondering if that took a toll on the overall relationship. And I know that you said also there's no point in necessarily bringing it to their attention because they have to come to that reckoning on their own. However, I'm wondering if you at any point did try to say something to them and how that was received as well.
Of course, you'd mention, you know, do you want to do without the drink today? Or, you know, just try and be subtle, try and be kind. And, you know, but after a while, it wears on them and they start getting angry and they don't accept what you're saying. And I suppose that's the beginning of the end of the relationship, to be honest. You know, the fact that you've caught them out, you've seen what they really are, and they don't want to accept it and they don't want you telling them anything. And the next thing you know, you're broken up. Your relationship is broken up. And I have come to the conclusion in my life in the future that I really don't want to be with somebody that drinks to excess. I cannot bear it. I cannot. Because not only does it change the relationship, they change too. Their personality changes. It's just too hard to deal with, really. And this person that you love is just changing all the time and you cannot do anything about it. You feel helpless. And it's really hard.
Thank you so much. My final question for you is, I'm going to make it a little bit about me since you are my aunt and you've known me my entire life. I'm wondering, did you ever suspect or think that I had a drinking problem?
I'll be honest. There was a time when it started to dawn on me that Nadine is always drinking. You know, you'd be coming to visit me and I'd think, oh, I got to get some wine in for her, you know. It was always about drink. It was always about some nice red wine. And there's nothing wrong with that occasionally, but like every time you saw her, she was drinking or she had a bottle of wine. She'd have one in her bag. And you think, oh my God, you know, that's handy. Yeah. But, and I think I mentioned it once to her very subtly. I said something like, do you really want to have a drink now? You know, something like that. Very, you know, say her, you, I mean. Yeah. Do you really want to have a drink now? And it was beginning to come together in my head that maybe she could do without so much wine. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. She came to the conclusion herself. She's beautiful. My beautiful niece.
Thank you so much for coming on to today's episode. I really appreciate it. I think it's very helpful for people at home to hear as well. Obviously, you guys know that I'm pretty candid about my alcohol use and my addiction. And I do feel that I'm an alcoholic because I can't just have one drink. So I thought it was really important to hear from someone who has more self-restraint and the capability to have a more healthy relationship with alcohol. So thank you for coming. I think people at home would really appreciate the message. Yeah. And you sharing.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, I love you. Thank you.
Love you.
Bye.
Moss Boss chocolate lion gray blend sea moss. We got this from a local retailer here and it is delicious.
So yummy. It tastes like a milkshake. Cheers.
120 nutrients are inside of this.
It's a meal replacement or a healthy snack. Zamri, thank you so much for coming on. So Zamri is my cousin. I've known her my entire life. She's honestly like a sister to me. Only child life over here. I want the viewers to understand a little bit more about you and your relationship with alcohol. So how would you define that for everyone listening at home?
I don't think I have a relationship per se with alcohol. I guess I'm more so of what people would consider a social drinker. I do not drink to get intoxicated. I'm not the person that will go to a restaurant and order a drink. Probably never do that. However, if I'm on vacation, that's usually my turn up time. So usually if I'm out of town on vacation, then I'll drink alcohol during that time frame. And then, you know, once I'm back to everyday life, back to no alcohol again. So I don't have a relationship with alcohol, but I do drink, right? Every now and then. I don't feel like I abuse it. I think I'm pretty responsible. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that most of the time I'm probably driving and I will not drink and drive ever. So if I know I'm going to have a drink, then I have to make sure that I have a designated driver that's going to be there, which is why usually on vacation, is what I'm drinking, because most of the time you're like probably on excursions or an island or wherever and you have a driver already. So I never have to worry about that part.
Thank you for sharing. I mean, I find it like my mind is blown that you can go to a restaurant. Like we went to dinner a couple nights ago and I ordered a mocktail. Zamri also ordered a mocktail. And I said to you, I was like, oh, you don't have to order a mocktail just because I'm ordering a mocktail. And you're like, no, I never drink. You get dessert, but never alcohol.
I also would say that, you know, a lot of people like wine. And I don't drink wine. So wine is like a big go-to when you go out to eat at restaurants. Like most people are probably going to order a glass of wine. But because I don't drink wine and I don't drink beer, that kind of eliminates that for me right there. Like creamy drinks like a Bailey's or something very, very fruity. So, you know, that would be like a real cocktail type of a drink. And I'm just not really going to waste my money on that when I go to dinner. Because like you said, I'd rather reserve my funds for dessert. So that's my main thing. Go-to is dessert over drinking liquor.
That's literally the opposite palate to me. Like, I want the strong, hard, dry. Like, I want to feel the poison. So obviously, like, you are a social drinker, as you define yourself. Was there ever a point in your life when you felt like your drinking patterns were unhealthy or were not just social or maybe, like, too excess in any way?
So I would say, yeah, not often. But yes, so my main time when that was that time frame for me was when I did my study abroad trip to Spain. So I like to drink when I'm on vacation, right? All right. I was there for 5 weeks. So that was a very long extended vacation for me. And we drank every single day, every single day, to the point where when I came back from Spain, I was like, I never want to see alcohol for a very, very long time because we drank every single day. Because imagine, I was on vacation for 5 weeks, essentially, in my mind, and I was able to drink. I didn't have to drive anywhere. We used public transportation. We figured out how to get around. Like I said, it was essentially an extended vacation for me, and I drank every single day there. When I came back to the U.S., I was like, I don't want to drink alcohol ever again. I mean, of course I did, but... But at that time, you know, that was my thought process. And I had also just turned 21 when I went on that trip. And one of my friends that I went with at the time, she was only 20. So imagine, like, we're coming from the U.S., we're drinking ages 21. You're not all the way legal yet. So it was like free for all because over there, the drinking age was 18. Yeah. And then you notice when you go there, they were kind of, this is many years ago, by the way, that we, I think it was like back in 2007, I went there. But at that time, you know, a lot of people knew that we were American because all the American kids came over there and we were like so drunk, like every day, where alcohol was not perceived like that over there. So, you know, they would have like, maybe the kids or would have like a glass of wine or something here and there, but they would never be intoxicated walking down the street, stumbling over or anything like that. So they always knew that the American kids were going to be staying there for the summer because of our behaviors and pretty much us being like, oh my God, we can drink alcohol, like, because it's like legal over here, kind of a thing. But I think that was like the main time I would say in my life that definitely I overdid the drinking.
And last week I was talking about like traveling when drunk. Was there ever a time when you felt like you were in an unsafe or compromising situation because you were so drunk in Spain or just in life in general?
Not in Spain, because first of all, I would never go anywhere by myself, right? In general, like that's just me. So I'm not going to go out by myself. Even though we were drinking every day, it was a group of us that were always together. I remember the night before we left, we were going from Spain and then we were going to be leaving to go to Paris the next day. I remember the night before they told us, they meaning like the school, told us that if we missed this flight, it would be like $3,000 one way to get back to the U.S., right? Because everything is already paid for before you go there. Basically, get up the next day, get on the bus, do not miss the flight to the airport. All right, cool. It's the last night in Spain, though. We've been drinking every day since we've been here. So, of course, we have to go out with a bang. And me and my friend, we were at, like, this bar. They had, like, bars everywhere. And a lot of people were there as well. Like, random people who were there kept buying us drinks. Drinks, drinks, drinks. We decided to take 10 shots of tequila, okay? 10 shots of tequila in a row, okay? And then afterwards, you were essentially crawling out of the bar. Literally, we got in the taxi. I don't even remember getting in the taxi. We crawled to the college dorm because, like, we literally could not walk. Thankfully for me, my bus was picking up me up the next day in the afternoon. But for my friend, her bus was picking her up at like 8 o'clock in the morning, right? So of course I went back to my dorm room, totally knocked out, unconscious, right? Because I was so drunk. But I had plenty of time because my bus was not leaving until the next day. Okay, my friend though at the time, she went back to her room. She got in the shower. She stayed in the shower. She never got out the shower because she was completely gone. Missed her bus, Okay. Somehow I don't even know like how she figured out that like I have to like get up at this point because like the bus has left us. Thankfully for her, two other people also were in similar situations and they missed the bus as well. So they were all able to hurry up and get a taxi and like basically like speed them to get to the airport so that they wouldn't miss their flight. They literally was like the last people boarding on their plane because they almost missed the flight. But it just made me realize like how lucky I was in that regard, because I was completely like comatose, knocked out, because I had so much liquor in my system from drinking that night that imagine like having to pay $3,000 for a one-way ticket back to the US and then having to tell your parents because who? 2007 prices. Right. So, you know, that's like $7,000 in 2022. And then actually like having to tell your parents that like you missed your flight because you was so intoxicated. So I think that was like the only like dangerous situation that I've really ever been in when it comes to alcohol. I don't really have any crazy stories besides my bachelorette night. And that was the most drunk I've ever been in my entire life. So my most drunk night, I don't remember it. I blacked out. That has never happened to me a day in my life. It was my bachelorette weekend, 2 days before I was going to be married. I was like, all right, you know, bachelorette, let's go out, blah, blah, blah. I had my cousins and my friends in town. We decided to go to South Beach and go to a club. Of course, we were pre-gaming before that, so I don't even know what type of liquor I had. We didn't even make it to the party bus. You guys did. We did not make it to the party bus. We were running down the street in our heels. We were pre-gaming in the hotel because they had got like all these props and stuff, you know, like final night, bachelorette, blah, blah, blah kind of thing. And so we made it finally to the club and I had like my bachelorette sash on. So, you know, just random people were like trying to buy drinks. Okay, you know, you cannot mix like all different types of liquor, which at that point I really didn't even realize what was happening. I drank so much liquor and I don't know what I drank because they were just at the bar giving me shots. And then like, remember we got that VIP section in the club and then like the bottle girls were coming out, bringing all of the more liquor. And then the next thing I know, it was the next day. I totally blacked out. Like I have never blacked out a day in my life. I woke up, I had vomit all in my brand new hair that I had just got to get my, because my hair was done for my wedding. Vomit all in my hair. Vomit was like apparently everywhere. Like they had piles of sheets because we were all staying in the same hotel room. It was a lot of us too, probably like 10 of us in this hotel room. Nobody wanted to sleep next to me apparently because I kept throwing up all night. Some other cousins there, one of them, she literally kept watch over me over the whole night because she was afraid, like she didn't want me to like choke in my sleep because I had like vomited so much. But I like completely blacked out. I was kicked out of the club, y'all. It was not even midnight. Like, come on. And we probably got there at like 11. So I was there for an hour. I got kicked out the club because all I remember is saying, oh, I got to use the bathroom. And two of my friends was like, all right, come on. I could not make it. I'd never made it to the bathroom and I couldn't walk. And I guess the bouncers told my friends like, listen, we'll let her stay here. But she can't be like this in here. Like she has to be able to stand up. And I couldn't stand up. And they kept giving me so many chances to be like, girl, like just get up, like stand your butt up so we can go back upstairs because everybody else is in VIP. No. They kicked me out. So what happened is once they kicked me out, my two friends came with me and they ended up putting me in a taxi. So all my cousins and my other friends were still in the club. They had no clue that like I had even been kicked out at this point. I think they've realized like almost 2 hours late. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning by the time they was like, dang, they've been in the bathroom for a long time because, you know, they were drunk too. So when we got back to the hotel, they had to put me in a wheelchair and they wheelchaired me into the hotel room. Like, because my friends actually took videos of me in this state. My friend, and she was doing like some crazy stuff. She was like, what's your husband's name going to be? Say your ABCs backwards. Like just like stupid stuff. And it was all recorded. So it was really funny like to look at it after the fact. But I had never been drunk like that before. I've never had a hangover a day in my life either. So imagine when I woke up the next day and I was totally hungover. I felt nauseated the entire day. I remember I was supposed to have a teeth whitening appointment. I lost my cell phone. Who knows where it went? And imagine like all my vendors' phone numbers are in my phone because my wedding is now the next day. So I was freaking out. My cousins had to take me to get like a Go phone. This was a long time ago too. This is like 10 years ago. a go phone, literally, because I was like, I need a phone. Like, my vendors are trying to reach me. I missed my teeth whitening appointment for my wedding. I was supposed to be working on my party favors. So, of course, my mom and my aunt were, like, so annoyed because they're at the hotel, another hotel, waiting for us to, like, put all the party favors together because the wedding is the next day. And I, like, can't function. And after that, I was like, I never in my life want to have this feeling of being hungover or drunk to the point where I don't remember anything, totally blacked out. I don't even remember throwing up. My cousins had to give me a shower. Like, they had to put me in the shower and literally wash my body because I could not move, and wash, like, the vomit out of my hair. So shout out to my cousins and family. But it was just, I was like, no, I never want to drink. And I didn't drink again for, like, a good year. First of all, I did not drink at my wedding. I was like, I never want to see alcohol day in my life again. And then I got pregnant, so obviously I didn't drink after that. So it was like a good year and a half probably after that, that I even decided to go back to even like sipping on alcohol, because it really scarred me. Cause I was like, I don't know how anybody can deal with this feeling of being hungover like every other day. It was horrible.
So as an expert in hangovers, I can tell you it's not a good feeling. And you didn't drink at your wedding. I wouldn't know that because I don't remember your wedding. I was so drunk. And I was Anne Marie's maid of honor. I hope people couldn't tell when I gave the speech that I was so drunk, but I don't remember the speech I gave. I drove from your venue back to the hotel. I was with friends and they were like, we're driving, get out. Like, you can't do this. So we pulled over on the side of the 95 and traded places. But I was so drunk. I hit my head at the hotel. I was like jumping on the bed. Anyway, thank you for sharing. That night was crazy. I think someone with such a low tolerance like you to be mixing all of those different types of alcohol was obviously a rookie mistake that you would never do again.
I learned my lesson for sure. I've never done that again. It's been 10 years.
Wow. Zamri works as a social worker at a hospital. So I'm wondering if you know any alcoholics, in your opinion, like how can you tell someone's an alcoholic? Very curious to know.
I guess it just depends on like how you define what an alcoholic is. I think everybody has their own definition of what an alcoholic is. Somebody who never drinks alcohol like a day in their life might consider somebody who drinks one drink a week an alcoholic, whereas somebody who is used to having a glass of wine every night, it's like, what do you mean? The doctors say what is it? A glass of wine a day keeps the doctor away. It's a lie. Although they do claim that red wine is supposed to be good for you, but it's not. But anyway, that's what people think, right? So that's how you justify being able to drink so much. I think we've had quite a few in our family in general, just over the years. A lot of the older generation, for sure. But I guess we thought that it was the norm, maybe, because like we grew up around it, right? We have a Caribbean background. So a lot of times in the Caribbean culture, you know, drinking alcohol is just an activity that they do all the time. Confirmation. After the confirmation, get your wine. I think I've grown up around it, but I don't have any close friends that I can say are alcoholics. But yes, in the field that I work in, of course, I have seen patients that have been alcoholics and I've seen the damage that it can do. I have family members that I believe are alcoholics as well. So I can see the effect that it has on them. And the thing about alcohol that is a little different from other drugs, I believe alcohol is like one of the worst substances that you can actually become addicted to, because unlike other substances, like more so like drugs and stuff, with alcohol, you technically can't really stop cold turkey if your body is used to the alcohol, because you can actually get yourself in more trouble, mainly because you can have seizures, right, that are related to alcohol withdrawal. So it has to actually be a process of weaning down of alcohol. And I've even seen where doctors have told certain patients or people that I know, I should say, that they literally have to drink like a little bit of alcohol every single day, even just a little bit, just because their body has been so tolerant on it for so many years that stopping it is actually more dangerous than continuing to drink the alcohol. So, I've been around it for sure. I don't have any personal experiences myself with drinking like that, but I have seen it for sure.
I remember a while ago I asked you, because Emery works, like I said, at a hospital, and I asked you what you thought the worst drug was, and I thought you were going to say heroin or just something that we as a society perceive as like the hard stuff. And you said alcohol, and I was surprised by that. I also feel that in our family, alcoholism runs deep, and we were desensitized is maybe the word I'm looking for. We were desensitized to how unnormal, in my opinion, it is to consume alcohol in excess, because we would go to functions and that was just like the norm. And it wasn't until later in life when I realized I went to someone's christening and there was no alcohol afterwards. I'm like, oh, boring.
What even to your point, like, funny enough, even with my wedding, even though I didn't drink, but of course the wedding had been planned, you know, months and months beforehand, actually paid extra money to make sure that my open bar was extended to like the length of the wedding and didn't just finish in a couple hours. Like, I wanted it almost through the whole entire wedding because I was like, oh my gosh, you can't go to a wedding and not have any alcohol at the wedding. And I was mainly doing that for my family because I didn't even drink anything. I had a signature drink. I couldn't even touch it. I don't even know what it looked like because I was so like turned off from alcohol at that point. But like, just so my family and friends could have a great time, I even made sure like, oh no, I got to extend this because nobody's coming to a function without open bar liquor. Like, come on.
I'll start to wrap by asking you, did you know that I had a drinking problem?
In the beginning, when I say in the beginning, okay, so like, you know, I'm older than Nadine. So I remember like one year, I remember it was when Hurricane Wilma came and you went up to Tampa and you stayed with me for like a week or two because there was no electricity in South Florida. And I was in college at the time. I went to the University of South Florida. And so you was like 14, I think, at the time. I was, what, 19, I guess. And I remember going into like all of these parties, and Nazine always looked like a lot older. She pretty much looked like my age or even older than me. So like I had like an extra ID. I'd give her my ID. They wouldn't even double check. They would just let her in or whatever. So we would go into like parties and stuff together, even though she was literally like 14, 13 years old, and we'd be in the club together. And she was my buddy, actually, my going out partner. And I remember like you being so intoxicated at the time. And imagine, it's like she was like 14, 15. Maybe at the time, and she was so drunk. But because like I'm not like overly drunk or whatnot, I was always able to just be like, okay, as long as I can keep tabs on what my cousin is doing, I'm okay with it. Like, she's just having fun. Like, I'm not, as long as she's not in any danger, which I would make sure she would never be in any type of danger because I would be there. And it's so funny because I remember the next day we were going to be driving to Orlando and you was hungover and you was like passed out in the car like, no, I feel so sick. And imagine this, like 14 years old. I'm like, no, get up. I'm all cheerful and cheery and stuff because I, you know, I didn't drink like that. But, you know, at that time, it definitely was happening, you know, drinking alcohol. And then it just kind of progressively increased. And then, of course, by the time you got to college, you was doing your own thing. Even then, I still didn't think it was a problem. I just felt like you were having fun and like, who am I to stop somebody from having a good time? Just because I don't enjoy that activity doesn't mean it's wrong. But I would say last year was the first time that I actually was like, in my mind, I was like, my cousin may have a problem with drinking. And that was when we actually went to Orlando again. Something about Orlando. We went to Orlando and she, like, you had like this breakdown there. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, we still went out. Right. With my friends, we still went out and like she disappeared. Mm-hmm. My friend had to put when we located her, mm-hmm. my friend had to put a tracking device on your phone. She still has it on there, by the way. She does. I think she's still following your location. She had to put a tracker on her phone because we would be like, hey, Nadine, like, don't go anywhere. And she's like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just standing here. And then we turn around and she would be gone. And I remember like literally looking. We're in Orlando. I'm not from Orlando, so I don't know the area. And we're in Orlando. We're looking for her. Finally, we spot her like down the street. And I remember passing this couple and they were like, you know her? And I was like, well, yeah, that's like my sister. Like, what? Where did she go? Did you see her? And they're like, oh, you need to get her. You need to get her. And I was like, what are they talking about? They're like, yeah, she's just walking around asking everybody for a cigarette. She wanted a cigarette so bad. She's just asking random people for cigarettes. And everybody could tell she was really, really intoxicated and just like walking down the street by herself. And Nadine likes to do a lot of stuff in like alone by herself, solo butterfly or whatever. Right. But anyway, yeah. So she likes being, you know, by herself. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to being around people. So just the thought of like her walking down the street by herself, super duper intoxicated and just like emotionally in a different space at that particular time, I was really concerned. And like I said, the rest of the night, like even though she was like, I'm fine. Like you got, you know, and then she started thinking we were treating her like a baby. Basically, she's like, I'm an adult. Like, what are you guys doing? And me and my friends are just in the corner like, no, we're just going to let her think we're not watching her. But literally we had eyes on her the entire time after that. In addition to the device, we would be like looking at my friend's phone like she's moving. She said she's at the front of the club and she's not, like she's walked away. Let's go find her. And we go out there and she'd be like, I told you guys I'm fine. We're like, yeah, maybe it's just time to go at this point. But honestly, that trip was, I was like, wow, I think my cousin has a problem. Just the level of emotion you had at that time. And I was like, something else is like going on here. And the drinking is just trying to mask whatever it is, because, you know, it's an outlet to be like, I can forget it all for right now. And just still, after having a very intense emotional session, I can totally forget about it, because guess what? I'm so drunk now. Now I can just go out and party and pretend like this never happened. So that's when I knew for me that I was like, wow, it was a problem. Now, before that, I knew that you drank a lot, right? But like I said, I was just like, all right, you know, she's just having fun. She's young, right? This is what people do when they're in college. Like, even like when your dad had passed away, I was like concerned about like how you would take it at that point. And I was just in my head, I was like, please, like, just don't like do something crazy, because like, you're so, you know, emotional. It's a very trying time. Something super unexpected happened, but, you know, thankfully you got through that time. And I was concerned. I was like genuinely concerned. I think I was pregnant. I was pregnant at the time, or I had just had my son. And I was concerned then as well. But last year, for sure, it was just, and it's crazy because then a month later you decided to be sober. Yeah. It was, 'cause this was like June of like last year, I want to say.
Thank you. I can't even attribute it to one thing, but I think something that you said that really I can touch on is the emotional instability that I felt at that time, and like the masking with the drinking was just, in my mind, a quick fix, but like clearly not getting at the root of the issues that I was dealing with, and not wanting to feel and go through the emotions was basically what I was escaping or looking to escape. But before that actual trip, so like there was a sequence of different seasons, I'll call that time, right? Last year, like we went on a trip to St. Thomas and I got super drunk. Same thing happened. I disappeared. Before that though, even before that, I had gotten into a fight like with someone. This is what stands out to me. This was actually one of the first like times that I really thought that maybe I had to get sober, and I didn't want to. Basically, I was in a bad emotional space. I'd gotten into a fight with someone and I called Zamri, and I was driving. I had been drinking, but I wasn't super drunk. I wanted to get super drunk. So as I'm driving home and I'm explaining the story to her and why I feel how I feel, I don't even think you knew this. Like, I had stopped driving at that point because she thought I was just going home. I'd stopped driving, ran into the nearest store I could find, Walgreens at that time. I wanted to buy alcohol. I wanted to buy wine. And literally, talk about divine timing. As I'm reaching, talking to her, yeah, like looking for the wine that I want, not telling her what I'm doing, I reach for the bottle and she's like, and I really hope that you don't get a bottle and do exactly the same thing that you're worried that the person that you care about is doing. They were drinking too much and it was impacting me. And here I am repeating the same process, the same pattern. And it took so much with straight. And to be honest, I probably drank later that night, but I didn't buy that bottle because I was just like, slap in the face, like, fuck, like, I can't buy this. The physical reaction I had is when I was like, oh crap, like, I think I have a problem and I don't know how to stop. Like, I don't know what to do about it, because all I want now is this thing that I can't have because someone called me out about it. And I want to prove to them, I'm a big on like proving people wrong. I'm going to prove to them that no, like, I'm not, like, I don't have a problem, so I'm not going to buy this. But like, my mind, I was dying. I really wanted that.
Last summer was a interesting time of events, and funny enough, you know, that St. Thomas trip was like our first trip that we actually like really went on together as adults.
Oh wow.
I mean, yeah, like a solo kind of trip. Yeah, I mean, we went like to England and stuff, but that was like family trip. Yeah, but that trip was like a friends type of friends family trip. So to like see you still right in that state, and everybody what knew you was the drinker of the whole entire trip. Everybody had like their role, you know, and you was the drinker for sure. Like, they were like, oh, where's Nadine? She went to get alcohol for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I got so drunk in the boat because you guys went and got breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things you didn't do. Like, you was totally out of it. Like, but like I said, it was one of those things where, like, I'm on vacation, right? So I want to drink too. So I would never be like, girl, don't. So for me, I just had to make sure I kept an eye on you, right? And I'm happy I did. So even though I was, you know, drunk at that time, because I remember we were like on the boat and stuff. We had like all of these events planned and we were just having a really good time. But I still had to make sure in the back of my mind, even as drunk as I was, that I knew where she was at all times. Because, I mean, literally, these people were trying to kidnap her. I had to find her. I was like, no. It was like, people, I don't know you guys. She's not going with you. And they're like, come on, what's the problem? I was like, listen, sir, she's not going with you. Get your hands off of her. don't ever call her again. Like, I had to, like, make it, like, known. Like, listen, she's not just anybody. Like, she got people who love her. Is going to make sure that, like, she's alive and okay. And I got to bring her back home. She can't get lost in St. Thomas, though. It was a very interesting time. But like I said, that was a different time because it was a trip. So everybody was having a good time. Whereas, like, when we came back and, like, you know, other things were happening, there it was no trip. It was just us living everyday life at that point. And, like, just trying to, you know, like I said, do a quick little weekend trip to Orlando or whatever we were doing. And then you was getting ready to start, like, really traveling again and stuff like that. So it was an interesting time.
It felt so good going down memory lane because that version of myself was just, I want to give her a hug. I was so sad, adding to my pain by using such a poisonous substance. Oh my gosh, thank you for sharing and, like, reminding me of that, because I feel like I've come really far and I want to keep going on this path.
Like, 100%. Like, you have made a lot of strides, you know, and I know it's not always going to be easy because, like you said, somebody like myself who's not really into big and drinking, you know, I can equate maybe that to my desserts. Like, you tell me, like, girl, you're not going to be able to have that cake and ice cream. What? No, I don't think you understand. Like, I needed to survive. You know, it's different. And everybody kind of has their addiction. It just depends on whatever their addiction is, right? And I guess it's just you just trying to navigate that life of knowing, like, okay, I can't do this.
Zamri, thank you so much for coming on. All right, I love you. Thank you.